Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. My friends, it is time for the Republican Party to fold. There's no other way to put it. The Republican Party has had its day. It's time to just ride off into the sunset. A new, uncompromising conservative party needs to be created in its place. Now, look, I know, those are not original words. Nothing original today. All kinds of people have been saying this for many, many years. Up until now, it's been a little more than a pipe dream. But with our constitutional republic dangling by a thin thread, this dream better become a reality while there's still time. I don't say this easily. Believe me, I am fully aware of the problems with third parties. Up until now, I have never advocated for a third party. I've hated them. I've spoken out against them because they don't work. I'm not saying that the party and what it stands for hasn't been a good idea. They just don't work. Oh, we remember all too well what happened in 1992 when the semi-conservative Ross Perot ciphered off votes from the semi-conservative President George H.W. Bush attempting to win his second term. Perot was nominated by a third party, the Reform Party. He and his party ended the party. They succeeded only in dividing conservatives and handing the election to Democrat Bill Clinton. So yes, we are painfully aware of the glaring third party paradox. Unfortunately, this may just be our only remaining option. You see what's going on? We all see what's going on. The Democrat Party power grab is doing everything possible to stay in control of Washington. Changing the rules and ignoring the Constitution means nothing to them. They are codifying election fraud by writing new laws about mail-in ballots, making it illegal to insist on voter ID, making it illegal for states to set their own laws for elections, which is what the Constitution says. Well, what do they care about the Constitution? They're talking about ending the filibuster, packing the Supreme Court, granting Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico statehood. You name it, anything to give us one political party instead of two. They launch such ambitious projects because they know the GOP's track record for fighting is anemic at best and usually downright worthless. It's not that Republicans do not continue to stand for the right things. They do. But prior to President Trump, Republicans had an abysmal record for following through with their stated agenda. The problem with politics in America, and I stated this on the radio many times, Republicans did not keep their campaign promises. Democrats did. Oh, to be sure, the Dems made gas hideous promises, but they did keep them. Republicans, on the other hand, make a courageous noise when they control Congress, but not the White House. They had no problem passing bills overturning Obamacare while Obama was still president, knowing full well that such bills were dead on arrival at President Obama's desk. But after President Trump was elected, when Republicans had the House and the Senate, and the White House, somehow they could not muster the strength to overturn Obama's crippling legacy. President Trump himself did keep promises, at least as many as possible. And yet, in the face of deep state tyranny ranging from false accusations about Russia collusion to election fraud itself, the support President Trump garnered from his own party was microscopic. During the DOJ's investigation into Russian collusion, an investigation which not only failed to come up with convicting evidence, but was green-lighted without proper legal predicate, then House GOP Majority Leader Paul Ryan showed zero interest in protesting the investigation. And this was the same Paul Ryan who, back when Trump was the presumptive nominee in 2016, called him a textbook racist. Why? Because Trump's business was involved in some potential lawsuit and the judge that was going to decide was of Hispanic origin, but Trump made it clear that his concern was that this judge had connections with La Raza. Whether or not that was true, that's what Trump believed. And yet Paul Ryan calls the presidential nominee, the GOP presidential nominee, the nominee from his own party, he calls him a textbook racist. And while Kevin McCarthy, who took over for Paul Ryan, did a better job of supporting President Trump, he distanced himself immediately from the president after the Capitol break-in on January 6th. The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters, McCarthy said. Oh, and Senator Lindsey Graham, you gotta love Graham. He was always coming on the Sean Hannity show, talking about all the things he was going to do for President Trump back when he wanted to get reelected. And he did do some things. He was there for Trump during the whole Kavanaugh thing. He was. But anyway, Lindsey Graham backed off from his support of Trump on that same day. Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate to end it this way. Oh, my God, I hate it. From my point of view, he's been a consequential president. But today, first thing you'll see, all I can say is, count me out. Enough is enough. However, President Trump's popularity doesn't seem to be going away. And so these same two men, wind-testing politicians to the last, are now portraying themselves as allies again. Neither man voted for the second impeachment, and Graham is no longer talking like someone who has had enough. I spent the weekend with President Trump. This is what he said later on in January. He's more determined than ever to grow this party, not shrink it. He is the most dominant voice in the Republican Party. Not Mitch McConnell, not Lindsey Graham. His ideas will stand the test of time. But few responses to the January 6 incident were as shameful as the words of Senator Mitch McConnell from the Senate floor on the day the Senate voted on the House's round two impeachment charges. There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically in. All right, I won't do my McConnell impression. It's not that good for one thing. Besides, I don't want a cartoon caricature to detract us from his words. I have too many of his words to quote here. I had fewer from Lindsey Graham. So let me just read these straight. McConnell says, there's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president, and having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth. The issue is not only the president's intemperate language on January 6th, it is not just his endorsement of remarks in which an associate urged, quote, trial by combat, it was also the entire manufactured atmosphere of looming catastrophe, the increasingly wild myths about a reverse landslide election that was somehow being stolen. These, again, are the words of Mitch McConnell from the Senate chamber on the day that they were voting on the impeachment, voting whether or not to convict. He'd already been impeached in the House of Representatives. And during the same speech, in response to Trump's claims of a stolen election, McConnell said, the legal system spoke, the Electoral College spoke. My friends, McConnell was misleading. There's no other way to put it. The matter had not been settled, not technically. Courts, including our Supreme Court, had refused to even look at the evidence of fraud. There's a difference between a court decision and a court refusal to try a case. And in the absence of courageous courts, 88 legislators representing five of the key questionable states requested time to re-examine the situation. They sent the following letter to Vice President Mike Pence, who was to preside over the official counting of the total 50 states' electoral votes on January 6th. There are extensive and well-founded accusations of electoral administration mismanagement and deliberate and admitted violations of explicit election laws enacted by state legislatures in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Therefore, we write to ask you to comply with our reasonable request to afford our nation more time to properly review the 2020 election by postponing the January 6th opening and counting of the electoral votes for at least 10 days, affording our respective bodies to meet, investigate, and as a body vote on certification or decertification of the election. This action can be completed prior to the inauguration date as required by the Constitution. All right, folks, look, while legal scholars may argue about the constitutionality of this request, such an unusual system of events warranted more than a safe, compromising political calculation. We expected our GOP Senate Majority Leader to offer at least a modicum of empathy. Instead, all we heard was that the legal system and Electoral College had spoken. Yeah, they had spoken, Mitch, but you ignored a large portion of what they spoke. McConnell also failed to mention that the high majority of the thousands upon thousands of January 6 protesters did not storm the Capitol, and that President Trump went out of his way to encourage a peaceful march while speaking to his crowd of supporters at the January 6th Washington rally. He said, and I quote, "I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard." Nevertheless, McConnell went on to claim that President Trump could have spoken against the violence after it broke out. The president, in fact, did, but not soon enough or forcefully enough for McConnell. And so we are left with a strong public rebuke from the Senate Majority Leader to the, at that moment, at that time, former President of the United States. And then, in true Washington form, in a manner that any aspiring politician might want to study as the template for fence straddling and atmosphere testing, McConnell switched gears. He voted against impeachment. He said, "But in this case, the question is moot because former President Trump is constitutionally not eligible for conviction." Now, this is a close question. No doubt Donald Trump was the president when the House voted, though not when the House chose to deliver the paper. Brilliant scholars argue both sides of this jurisdictional question. The text is legitimately ambiguous. I respect my colleagues who've reached either conclusion. But after intense reflection, I believe the best constitutional reading shows that Article 2, Section 4 exhausts the set of persons who can legitimately be impeached, tried, or convicted. It's the president, it's the vice president, and civil officers. We have no power to convict and disqualify a former office holder who is now a private citizen. Ladies and gentlemen, this statement to me just came across as the other half of McConnell's self-surviving politics and insurance policy, just in case Trump's popularity continues to grow, making him the 2024 nominee, or at least kingmaker for other nominees. McConnell was harnessing both directions of the wind. And yet, it also seemed clear that McConnell was hoping Trump would be gone for good, offering a wink-wink nod-nod to possible criminal charges. He said, "President Trump is still liable for everything he did while he was in office as an ordinary citizen. Unless the statute of limitations is run, still liable for everything he did while he was in office. We have a criminal justice system in this country. We have civil litigation, and former presidents are not immune from being accountable by either one." Yes, it's tempting to say that we expect more from our Republicans than a circling firing squad. Unfortunately, none of this is a surprise anymore. Cowardly, politically expedient betrayal is the usual action du jour. We can no longer put our hope in the GOP. While a third party may not seem to be the answer, perhaps it's time to think outside the box. Let's use our imagination for a moment to see if some bold, unusual strategy might just make a new party work after all. Supposing a new movement began to grow using a strategy likened to the Tea Party movement, a party which supports Republicans temporarily by holding their feet to the fire and removing rhinos during primary season. Yes, so far we've seen this sort of thing happen. We've seen it a lot. But what if this time a clever new step was added? What if enough conservatives were elected as Republicans to regain a majority in both houses, conservatives concurrently showing loyalty to a new party? We'll just call this newly formed party Party Z for the moment, so as to have a reference point without quivering over names. Here's the $50 million question. After coming into office, what is there to prevent every single one of these newly elected senators and congressmen from simply switching affiliation? If all at once they moved over to Party Z in one fell swoop, a new party would now be in power instead of being sacrificed at the altar of three-party elections. I know, this sounds outrageous. Yes, of course it sounds outrageous. It sounds too good to be true. It sounds like something that could never happen. I get it. But before dismissing the idea out of hand, consider this. On an individual basis, we have seen this kind of maneuvering, and we've seen it often. Since the year 1890, 21 elected senators changed party affiliations after taking office. These included, in modern times, Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut and Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania. Lieberman switched from Democrat to Independent in 2006. Specter switched from Republican to Democrat in 2009. Well, there's no accounting for taste, Spector. Even more U.S. congressmen made the switch. Recent examples are Justin Amash, who switched from Republican to Independent in 2019 and switched again from Independent to Libertarian in 2020. Jeff Van Drew, who made a lot of news, changed party affiliation from Democrat to Republican in 2019. And so, if this can be done piecemeal, who's to say it can't be done in concert? Undoubtedly, some legal expert will explain how this is impossible. In any event, there are probably better ideas. The purpose of this podcast today is to simply inspire some creative thinking, even if that takes us to a plan no one is articulating at the moment. Either way, somebody better think of something soon, or we can kiss our once great republic goodbye. If your hope is still in the GOP after what they did to President Trump, then perhaps you should form a party of your own. How about the Pollyanna Party? This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.